Journey I take on Broadway and beyond. It's Broadway Journeys.
He is a man of justice. He is a man of might. Today, I'm chatting with the totally awesome Brian Holden. Brian is a founding member of Team Starkid and has played many different roles in their productions as an actor, co-writer, director, and producer. He is best known for starring as Remus Lupin in a Harry Potter sequel and went on to star as Superman in Holy Musical Batman, Junior in Starship, JJ and Admiral Modi in Ani, Flopsy in Me and My Dick, Rubius Hagrid and Lupin again in a Harry Potter senior year, and Smelly Balls in Firebringer. He has narrated over 7 audiobooks, including Dead Moon, 1% Murders, The Adair Classroom Mysteries, and most recently, The House in Poplar Wood. Here is my interview with Brian Holden. Welcome to Broadway Journeys, Brian.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good.
Thanks for being here today.
Of course.
Now, Brian, how did you first catch the musical theater bug?
Well, I was in high school, and where I went to high school in Traverse City, Michigan, we had like a very small theater department in my high school, but mostly like the big productions and the ones that were really fun to work on were the musicals. So I kind of like saw that, and that was really one of the only major performing outlets. So while, you know, if that weren't the case, I don't know if I would have gotten totally into musical theater, because my favorite thing was like Saturday Night Live and Mad TV and sketch comedy. But since musical theater was one of the main performing outlets, I kind of got involved with that through the choir program at my high school.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, when schools have really good musical programs, like that's usually how people get or like gravitate towards that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, you've written the book for many a Starkid production, co-written the book. When did you first begin writing?
Really, in college with Nick and Matt is when I first really tried my hand at like writing stuff. And mostly it was just kind of like hanging out with them. And really just kind of came about more because it was like, all right, we're going to put on the show. The first show we did, well, the first show I worked on them or worked with them on was it was called the Hobbit 2, The Lord of the Rings is what we called it. And it was just like a parody play of Lord of the Rings. And it came about just as we were like trying to come up with the story for it and kind of joking around. And that's how I ended up writing on it. It wasn't like an official, like, we're going to write on this thing. It was just that we were friends and enjoyed joking around and making silly stuff together. And so we started working on that.
Like an actor or a writer first?
Definitely an actor. Yeah, definitely an actor. Because I loved, as I said, Saturday Night Live and like sketch comedy and stuff like that. And I loved, in high school, I did 2 musicals. I did Guys and Dolls and Singing in the Rain and just loved that. And so kind of went into college, you know, having an acting mindset. But it was a lot of theater acting and stuff like that where I learned like the important principles of acting. But I don't think I ever considered myself to be a super serious actor. So, yeah.
Right, because you guys do a lot of funny stuff. Very silly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Silly stuff.
When were you first introduced to like improv and comedy?
Well, I guess sort of through some of those sketch shows I mentioned and like I had seen Whose Line Is It Anyway? The Drew Carey iteration when I was in high school. So I think that was definitely part of it. But also at college, there were a few improv groups at University of Michigan where I went to school. There was Wits End, which is a group that a lot of funny people have come out of. And also Comco, which also has had a lot of funny people. Comco was more sort of short form games like what you might see in a Whose Line Is It Anyway thing. And Wits End was more like people doing what they call long form improv, which is more kind of what you see at a lot of the improv theaters these days. So that was really my first introduction into it. And then I eventually ended up in Comco. And yeah, kind of kept doing improv from there.
Embarrassing audition stories?
Oh, yeah, sure. The one that immediately comes to, I mean, I still have embarrassing auditions to this day because, as you know, this is like a podcast that's focused on Broadway. And because of my work with StarKid, a lot of people don't necessarily like watch all the StarKid shows, but they're like, okay, yeah. So you're like musical theater comedy guy. I get it. And they send me out for like shows like Book of Mormon and like, things like that, stuff that is like very vocally hard. And like, while I've been in many musicals through StarKid and stuff like that, and some of the ones I mentioned in high school, I don't consider myself like a Broadway level musical theater type of person, just like with my skill set and with my musical, my singing ability. So they'll send me out for like Book of Mormon stuff, and I'm just screeching at the top of my lungs, like trying to sing Man Up, you know, and yeah, stuff like that. A few years ago, I auditioned to be an understudy for Dear Evan Hansen, and those songs are really out of my range. So that was definitely an example of my agents not really understanding like what I was capable of at that time. But I did it, and I did a self-tape, so I had to watch it, and it was a terrible experience. And then there was one of the first musicals I ever auditioned for. I was in middle school, and there was a community theater production of West Side Story going on. Mm-hmm. And I straight up had the gall to audition for Tony as a middle schooler.
Wow.
It eventually went to like a sort of friend's dad. So they cast like, I mean, which is still kind of messed up because Tony, I think at the time was like, he wasn't in high school, but he was like a young person, I think, right? In the original show of West Side Story? Yeah. Anyway, so I auditioned for Tony, which is very funny to think about, like a squeaky, you know, 14-year-old Brian Holden auditioning for that. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Going back to StarKid, how did you first get involved with Team StarKid and Nick and Matt?
Well, we went to college together, so we were just kind of friends, yeah. And Team StarKid came about, as I was saying, because of some of those plays that we were writing. Nick had 1 year done a sort of comedic version of The Hobbit, and then 2 years after that, we did our parody of Lord of the Rings. And then the next year, and sort of the next logical step, though Nick and I had graduated by that point, Matt decided to direct a show that we called Harry Potter the Musical. And he asked Nick and I to help him write it and stuff like that. Or I think it was just assumed that we would help him write it. So Nick and I wrote that from Los Angeles, and he and Matt wrote and directed it from Ann Arbor. And then Darren and AJ wrote the music and lyrics and everything. And that became a Harry Potter musical. The rest is kind of history. This is our 10-year anniversary, by the way.
Yeah, it's coming right up. That's crazy. The StarKid homecoming. Congratulations.
Yeah.
By the way, that's going to be so totally awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. It will be totally awesome. I'm not sure when your podcast usually comes out, but we've got a Kickstarter that's going through the beginning of May. If you want to help us, we've got two events this year. We're doing an event called StarKid Homecoming, which is like a celebration of our 10 years of StarKid, of being a company. Then we also have a new show in the fall that Nick and Matt have written, and Jeff Blim is writing the music for, I think, and that's going to be called Black Friday. It's kind of like a horror comedy musical.
Looks really scary good.
Yes.
Yeah, I usually hate creepy dolls and stuff, but this one looks fun.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten the full story on how they made that doll, but in the preview they put up, it looks amazing.
Ugh, yes, so terrifying, so good.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Lord of the Rings the musical, now that it's been like a few years, would you ever want to put on like a bigger production of that, or is that gone?
I think the version we did is gone. It was really rough, though it was an important step in us like becoming better writers and stuff, but that version is gone. We've talked about it before. We're like, we should redo Lord of the Rings, because at the time, it was so fun to do, and I think that people really liked it, and got people excited for when we said we were going to do a Harry Potter musical the next year. But it is, I've watched it, it's like 3 hours long, it's very rambling, very like self-indulgent in a high school or in a college theater sort of way, and has like, I might have some jokes that are topical, but probably not, honestly. It's mostly just a little bit boring, but we were trying to make ourselves laugh as much as we could. And I think when you're in college and used to things like 24-hour theater and not used to seeing much funny stuff in general, I think it was a real treat for us and maybe for people watching it to be like, oh my gosh, theater doesn't have to be like this heavy, angsty, emotional stuff all the time. It can actually be funny too.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys theater, it's like really good as like a really escapist thing, like watching, you're just like, oh, I'm just happy. This is just such a fun, nerdy thing to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is true, and we hope that's how people feel, and yeah, we just try, you know, we keep it pretty light. We don't try and like get too serious about anything that we do or get too serious about ourselves, which I think opens the doors for people to come in and sort of watch something that is, I also think it helps people forgive us a little bit for like sometimes our bad production values, especially in that first year or two of the show or whatever, something like that. So, yeah.
How did you guys first come up with the idea for Starship?
That was an idea that that Joe Walker and Darren had been tossing around for a few years. It was this idea of Starship Troopers musical. And Starship Troopers is this kind of like B-level movie from like, God, is it from the 90s? I think it must be. Neil Patrick Harris is in it, in case he's listening. Hi, Neil. But yeah, it's this like, it's like a B movie that's like, you know, feels like it's based on like a pulp novel about, human forces fighting space alien bugs. And, so we took a bit of that. We took a bit of Little Mermaid. You know, once we had this sort of vehicle in StarKid for giant, silly musicals. And by that point we also had a little bit of money. We were like, oh my God, we could like build all these puppets. We could do all this stuff. And so that's that we kind of like gravitated to that idea that Joe and Darren had had. So, yeah.
What was your favorite crazy puppet in the show?
In that show? Bugette is really cool. It's this giant sort of like beanbag chair with like, it looks like a Mario like creature, you know, like in one of the Marios, there's like that creature that is just all like cactus balls or something.
Centipede-y thing.
Yes. Yeah. Very centipede-y. Yeah. But then also from inside that giant beanbag sack, like all these tiny little bugs could come out and, you know, so that one is quite cool, but they're all pretty good. I mean, Pinsir is a giant puppet that blew us away when we saw it, but it was also very difficult to operate and to move around and stuff like that. So it was pretty challenging. So yeah, one of those I think would probably be my favorite or what I was most impressed by.
So you played Hagrid in Harry Potter sequel and Junior in Starship. What is it like to write a character for yourself in a show, to work on the book of a musical you're also in?
That's an interesting question. So, it's interesting to do that. It's kind of fun. I mean, I think that the way I write and the way I write in particular with, Nick and Matt is we just, we like improvise and we just like talk through scenes, for a really long time. We'll just talk as the characters for a really long time until we feel like we have a funny flow of dialogue or a funny scene, and then we eventually kind of write it down and try and write down the better parts of that and distill it into something good. Now, you wouldn't always know that we've distilled it down because our scenes are always very long, but so in that way, I think it's a little bit natural because we're kind of playing all the characters naturally anyway as we're writing. So I think it comes from a little bit of that. And characters like Lupin and Hagrid and Junior, like in my sort of acting and improv, I usually play a character that has like a lot of bravado or is very confident in themselves, but is also like very pathetic and vulnerable as well. Like very pathetic to everyone else, but like really trying to make it seem like they're on top of all of their crap, you know?
Right.
So Yeah. So I think that lends itself to as I'm like improvising these characters, it lends itself to those characters that I end up playing as well.
Right. Now you played the evil and bad to the bone Junior in Will you play a villain again in a future Starkid production or in general?
Yeah, I love playing villains. I really do. I just worked on this short video for a group called The Onion Labs. It's kind of like this division of The Onion, the satirical newspaper and now like online organization, where they do sort of like branded content. So I got to play this like corporate jerk, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's always fun being a jerk. So yeah, I would really like that. I don't know when I'll do if I'll do that in another Starkid show soon, but we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. Now in Holy Musical Batman, speaking of pathetic characters, you played underappreciated, down on his luck Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Are you more of a Superman fan or a Batman fan?
That's a good question. I really do like Superman. When I was kind of a kid and then like maybe a teenager, there were these great animated series that often involved Paul Dini and Bruce Timm and stuff like that. So I really loved Superman the Animated Series. I loved Lois and Clark growing up, the Dean Cain, Terry Hatcher show. And so I really do love Superman. I think that he's a fun character and things like that. I think that Batman is a great character too, but sometimes it's like he can do too much and can do kind of like anything.
Yes.
And I think people take Batman a bit too seriously sometimes, but he's a great character as well. What I've enjoyed thinking about in recent years is like ways in which like characters like Superman and Batman could actually do good in the world. Like, if Batman is a millionaire or billionaire, there's so many better uses of his money than like buying his own jet and, you know, things like that. I mean, like, he could do so much more good than dressing up like a bat and running around the city and pretending to be a detective. Superman, there's this great part of a Frank Miller comic where they've had the Flash just running on a treadmill for years to generate electricity and to generate power for the country. And that would be such a good use of someone like Superman or the Flash's powers. Just use their immense power to eliminate our energy dependence on, you know, foreign oil or just like fossil fuels in general. So, yeah.
Whoa, I've like never thought about it that way, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
yeah.
Like Superman run on the treadmill for years. Like everybody could have super strength. It'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like one way that they use nuclear power in real life today is they use like nuclear reactions to just heat water, which creates energy, you know, and it moves motors and stuff like that. Superman could do that so easily with his heat vision, or he could just like turn a crank and like create a bunch of energy from that, you know. I don't know. There's a lot of good these superheroes could be doing besides flying around and waiting for like a building to fall over or something.
Right. Now, in Ani, you played Jar Jar Binks, or JJ, probably the universally despised Star Wars character. Are you a Jar Jar hater yourself?
I think that I didn't really get into Star Wars until I was like in middle school. So I never had like a super intense attachment to the Star Wars world. I like it, but I was never like reading the extended material and stuff like that. So when those movies came out, I was like, oh, okay. I was kind of just like, I kind of watched them and then let them go. So I was never like a super big Jar Jar hater. But in recent years, that actor who played Jar Jar talked about like how the vitriol from Star Wars fans like made him suicidal and stuff like that. So which is also weird to talk about in relation to our show. I don't know if what we did was like maybe just straight up too disrespectful. I didn't learn about that till after we did the show. Anywho. So I don't hate on him anymore. I think that when it's getting to the point where people, And like the girl who played, the woman who played Rose in The Last Jedi, yeah. How she was basically like forced off of Instagram because of all the hateful comments. Like, it's so wildly inappropriate and overblown to treat people who are just making a movie that way. So no, I'm not a hater of things like that anymore. I'm not a hater of Marvel movies. I don't get hung up about stuff like that anymore. I didn't really like a lot of the DC movies, and you know, maybe right after I'll see one, I'll be like, "What the hell happened?" for a little while, but I don't get too into it anymore. Yeah.
I think that's good. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. You're like, "Yeah, yeah, that's a good thing, Brian." Yeah.
No, it really is. It's good for the world.
It is. Yeah.
People hating on these characters or actors just we already have happening.
Yeah, there are much bigger fish to fry, that's for sure.
Yes. So you did a really fun Jar Jar impression as JJ and Ani. What are your favorite impressions of people or characters to do?
That's a good question. Favorite impressions of people or characters. Well, I do enjoy doing Hagrid from you know, like kind of my version of him from senior year, I guess. That is fun. And that's the character voice I try and use. I'm an audiobook narrator now, so I try and use that in my audiobook narration. Because it's just a good voice and like it comes with an attitude as well. And I'm trying to think of what other impressions I do. I don't know, if Meredith were here, she might be able to tell me. But I can't think of any off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, don't apologize. I was thinking you should probably narrate the Harry Potter books because, like, you can already do a ton of those voices.
Yeah. I've done that. So, like, every now and again we'll do a charity event and I, like, as a giveaway, narrated a chapter from, I think, Prisoner of Azkaban or something like that. And I was like, that was great. That was so fun. But people are like, yeah, your English accent's kind of just okay. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll take that under advisement. Yeah, they're actually trying to be complimentary. I think the way they phrase it is like, I love how his English accent comes in and out. And I'm like, all right. I thought I was in it the whole time. But that's one of the reasons why I got into audiobook narration is because I was reading, Meredith and I read the Harry Potter books every year now. And we were reading it out loud to each other, and I was like, this is so fun. So I started looking into it. Now, yeah, here I am.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
How did you guys first come up with the idea for Firebringer?
Firebringer was, there was some part of the idea that had been around for a few years about a story about cavemen or cave people who discovered fire. It originally was a male in the role of the firebringer type person. And I'm not even sure that name came about like right away, but eventually Matt and Nick, when we needed a show to do back in 2016, Matt and Nick asked Meredith to come on board and like to help write it and everything like that. And so the idea started changing quite a bit and we decided we wanted to have it be a cast that had mostly female main characters, since that's something that up until that point, like 7 or 8 years into Starkid, we had never had. We had so many great female people in the cast. So, yeah, that's kind of where the idea came for that, yeah.
Yeah, that was very cool, because it's a very rare thing to see, like, a predominantly female cast in pretty much any musical.
So. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that from our perspective of being kind of like, you know, and just as we're growing up too, we became more aware of it. And, you know, the women in our group trusted us enough to be like, you know, this is something that would be nice. It's like, I don't know, from our perspective, especially since most of what we do is like nerdy comic book stuff, there's already so much that leans towards like a male point of view in that stuff that we usually had that as we were going through things, but it was nice to break out of that. I think it was good for all of us who were involved to, yeah, really try and challenge ourselves to not write from such a, you know, male centric point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really cool how you guys are always going in different directions with your stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We try.
What were the most fun characters and parts to write in Firebringer, and what were the most difficult parts to write?
Well, most fun characters. I think that Molog became one of everyone's most fun characters to write because great character, and also I think we knew that Lauren Walker was going to be doing it, and we even added in more material for her to perform because she's so brilliant and wonderful. Chorn likewise became fun and funny to use and to work on because just like a, you know, a great comedic and sort of silent character. The challenging stuff was we actually tried to, there was an idea for this show at first, and then we tried to add in more characters so more people could be in the show. So that was a little challenging at first, just to try and come up with like good material for everyone so that they could feel featured and have a spotlight and also have it serve the story as well. So that was a little bit of a challenge at first, but I think we came around in the end and everyone ended up with something pretty unique and good and groovy in the show. So yeah.
Favorite Smelly Balls parts of Firebringer?
Well, Smelly Balls is my character name, just in case anyone is wondering about that. So this is obviously the height of sophistication. I like how a moment ago I was like, you know, we really tried to challenge ourselves and evolve and become better. And my character was called Smelly Balls. Favorite Smelly Balls parts to write were... just when he starts talking about like family a lot, which he does a lot. And I generally like characters that get confused, but are enthusiastic and passionate. And that is just Smelly Balls to a T. So Smelly Balls has a big monologue at one point in the show, which I think I added about 2 or 3 minutes to every night that I performed it, much to the chagrin of all my castmates. But, yeah, I think that was definitely a fun part to write.
There are lots of dramatic pauses in there, which I just think
is
fitting.
I think I'm really waiting and asking for the laughs in a very unprofessional and honestly just pathetic sort of way. So, yeah.
I don't think so, no.
Well, thank you.
Now, I know you are a big Star Trek fan, so of course we must discuss Star Trek a little bit.
Yes.
Who is your favorite Star Trek character?
That's such a hard question. I'd say my top two are Data, because I think I relate most with Data, and I admire Picard the most, but I think I love Beverly Crusher the most. She and also I just love Gates McFadden's performance. I think that she is so wonderful on the show, and on a show that is like has pretty like heightened aesthetics, you know, like aliens are, you know, appearing out of nowhere and everywhere and stuff like that. I think that she is like so grounded and funny and really nice on the show. Data is like just a reflection of humanity and has some of the most beautiful parts in the show, but is also one of the funniest because of that same sort of thing where he can be like very oblivious and like comedic because of that.
Right.
And Picard is just like, you know, in ways that I feel like other captains of Star Trek shows have not been, he is just the height of moral integrity, you know, really is a hero to look up to, really believes and holds true to the principles of the Federation and particularly of First Contact. Now, in a show that lasts 7 years and has like 25 episodes a season, there are times when, you know, he falters and stuff like that, but that's what's beautiful about the show, and that's what's interesting to watch. So, yeah. Plus, you know, Patrick Stewart is just a masterful actor, so I'm always looking at stuff like that, too, as I'm watching.
Now, there were some elements of Star Trek in Starship, what we, you know, Starship Rangers, like, you know, Starship Enterprise, but would you guys ever want to do, like, a full-out Star Trek parody musical?
That's a great question. I think that we could, but I think that there is too much crossover with Starship, because like our approach to anything really is just to make it stupid, and we kind of really already did that quite a bit with the team that they have there Although there's a lot more like Alien, you know, with Sigourney Weaver in Starship than there is actual Star Trek.
Right.
But I think that Star Trek also is better for like a series, you know, where you can have a core cast that you rely on and then get to check in with every now and again as they go on different adventures.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
What is your all-time favorite role that you've played in a StarKid musical?
I think it probably is like Lupin or Superman. Superman was so fun because I had the best costume in the world. So it was so fun to play that role. But Lupin was also very fun as well. I've got very fond memories of doing that. It was like he is so pathetic, but wants so desperately to be loved and liked and thought of as people's like friend and just generally be accepted. But it drives him to do really crazy things. And I love that about any character, you know?
Yes, and also with Superman, too. Superman, he just wants to be Batman's friend.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, big motif in all my characters.
Yes, yes. I mean, maybe not Hagrid, but Hagrid, that also applies to Hagrid. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his whole thing was that, you know, they stopped coming to visit him, and he was very disturbed by that, yeah.
Maybe Junior is the exception, because Junior's more of, like, a psychopath, so...
Yeah. I think Junior is a... Yeah, he's a little bit different. Mm-hmm.
He's a little different. Brian, thank you so much for being on here today.
It was such a pleasure. Thanks for the interview. Thanks for reaching out.
Thank you so much for listening to Broadway Journeys. Remember, if you like the podcast, subscribe, rate, comment, and tell a theater-obsessed friend.